So I know we've talked about this almost every time now these last few months, but I have to ask again, how are you dealing with your winter storm supply of salt and trucks and people
People.
and budget and all of that?
Yeah, it's been a real trying year for everybody. It has been much more than we expected. And I must say, in all candor, I'm sorry we didn't get the record this weekend, because I think we all would have said 2013-14 was a terrible winter, but at least we set, a record for accumulation. We're actually doing okay. I think some of the reason we are is the good planning our Public Works Commissioner did last year, that we did make sure that we brought in all the product that we had ordered and anticipated. And even though we didn't use it and didn't need it, fortunately, we were stockpiled as we started the year. I think the one thing, as we talked last week, as we were preparing for this last round of storms, was that the temperatures are the things that have really hurt our budget. And it's not because of the product, but because it's been so cold, the product hasn't worked, and we've had to use sand for the first time in 10 years on our roads in order to provide some traction for vehicles. So we didn't have a budget for sand. We are taking it now from another area. Our product budget's fine. He's been able to manage our overtime budget okay, but sand, which fortunately is the cheapest of those, has been the thing that's thrown us off a little bit.
Well, and then you mentioned the temperatures, then I assume that also takes a toll on city electric bills too. I assume those are
Oh,
probably
certainly.
going through the roof. Are you
Certainly.
able to handle all that? I
I
mean, I guess you
think
have to,
we
right?
have to. We have to. I mean, people, when they're working, have to be warm. So it's like at home. We look at our own electric bills or our gas bills at home and realize that when it's 0 degrees or -7 degrees outside, we'd certainly still like it to be 66 or 68 inside, and we pay that to keep the temperatures where they are. So yes, we're managing it. I think the other thing that we haven't talked about yet is certainly something that we're going to be working on for the next several months, are the potholes that come as a result of the freeze and the thaw and the applications that we put on, as well as the precipitation.
So Greencastle has those too.
Oh, we sure do. They seem to just rise from nowhere.
To switch gears just a tad though, I did read about a new splash park that's coming to Greencastle. Let's talk about that. Something spring-like and summer-like.
Spring-like and wonderful. Spring-like and wonderful. I think we've all read about municipal pools having difficulties keeping up with changes in regulations and the cost to keep them affordable and the cost to maintain them. And our infant pool had been closed down for the last 2 years, and it had been for some requirements that had been put in terms of ADA accessibility and a difficult time in us achieving what was needed. So we have a group of wonderful young women called the Greencastle Civic League. That's an organization that's 20 plus years old, who came up with a project that they wanted to be engaged in, and that was a splash park. So we talked a lot about where it was going to be, and then we finally came to the conclusion that offering something like that instead of trying to reopen our infant and waiting area would be a wonderful addition to our aquatic center. So they, along with our park and recreation director, put in an application for a DNR grant. We got the grant. The group, the Civic League group, was committed to raising $150,000 match for the grant. So we are actually going to be opening bids in the next couple of days on how we did in terms of our planning for that and when we can begin construction. We had a lot of in-kind contributions that the Civic League went out and garnered for us, and the demolition of the existing site took place last week. So we had our first step to the creation of the splash park. And again, that was all donated services, and we most certainly find ourselves grateful for the community's buy-in to this project, the ability for a civic organization to come together with the city and do something that's going to be a wonderful addition, a wonderful amenity to our aquatic center. And the real plus on this too is that it's a recirculating water system. So efficiency-wise, it's a very positive thing, but we're not going to have it staffed with lifeguards, because there will be no standing water, and it's going to be free and open to the public, and it will have extended hours, whereas our pool is dependent on lifeguard schedules and times of day, that this will be able to be made accessible for more weeks in the year, more weeks even after school begins, and different times during the day. So it's really exciting.
Yeah. Is there a timeline that you expect?
Boy, we're hoping by July 4th it's open.
Wow.
So it's pretty aggressive, but it's going to be exciting, and the community is going to watch it build. And again, many of us take pride, both from in-kind donations, from groups working together, and that's really what it's come down to now, for communities to be able to add to their park system, to be able to do things with special presentations and the arts, and it's people coming together and bringing talents together and working together for a dream and to make it happen.
When you have new projects like this, is there any type of survey or things that go out to the residents to see exactly what they want?
That's some of what we have been doing as we've gone through community planning process and our community summit that was in first kickoff in August and then followed up in October of 2013, excuse me, and identified what are the things we need, you know, what are the things that are lacking, and most certainly an addition and be able to add that kind of splash pad amenity was one of those things. We still have a long list, but one by one, if we can tick off of those, we're doing pretty well.
I wanted to also talk a little bit about state legislature. We're still hearing about the elimination of the business personal property tax, and I know every mayor I've talked to has a lot of concern about that, and I assume you do too, when we're talking about what, perhaps 20% of your budget that could be gone if it's eliminated.
Total elimination would be 20% of our budget, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For the schools, it would be 21% of their budget and no replacement. And that's the part I think that you've probably heard other mayors talk about too. I mean, you don't take it away unless you replace it. And with property tax caps and many of us pushing on those kinds of things, reform to TIF, you know, tools that communities have in order to be able to continue to provide services, to continue to be able to partner with groups, to create a splash park. We're losing our ability to do that. And so I think that's why you've heard such a loud outcry. And even if we scale it back to the Senate proposal, which was businesses, it started out at 25% of the value of property and then down to 20%. It's a step saying that, you know, this is going to make a difference. I think many of us are skeptical and what kind of an impact that really is going to have on business development in areas. Is it going to make a difference between coming to Indiana and moving a business from here someplace else? I'm not really sure. And those are fairly small businesses we're talking about at that level. But it's a step to say, you know, we're going to take a little bit back, and I understand compromise. But again, it's with no replacement. And I think many of us are concerned that's just the first slip on a slope that has a pretty steep decline.
What's your message?
Message has been, please realize the devastating effect that any continued loss of income is going to have, not just on our ability to provide services, but it's also going to affect on the property owner who is next door to City Hall. Because until we hit those tax caps, it's going to be moved to private property owners. And that's, you know, seemingly a real hit for them also. So it hurts cities and towns. It hurts individual property owners. And again, the sooner we push up on those caps, we're left with no alternatives, once again, to be able to provide services. And our biggest costs are most certainly personnel.
I know in the past we've talked a lot about grants, one that continues every month, it seems, is the ongoing Stellar grant, and what's next?
Sure.
And here we are in March.
What's next?
Yeah.
There are a number of things happening. Last night we had a meeting with interested property owners in the downtown about our second floor loft program. We brought in a representative from Indiana Housing and Community Development, which is the funding agency for that piece of our Stellar pie. And we brought in the architectural firm that we had procured, as well as the grant administrators, which are required, that we had procured, to bring people together to talk about the program, to talk about what it means to participate in the program, what the uncertainties are, what the things we know for sure are, and we're asking people to evaluate what this has to offer them. Are they at a point of wanting to participate? answering their questions, getting more answers to questions, and hoping by March the 21st, they'll make a decision as to whether or not they want to participate, and then we'll begin architectural exploration of spaces before we can do our actual application to IHCDA. What we also have going on is we're waiting to set the date for our pre-construction meeting on another streetscaping project, which is going to be really the demolition and the reconstruction of one of the connector streets between the university and the downtown. It's also going to be a major infrastructure project in terms of capturing stormwater, detaining it, and then moving out into the rest of our stormwater system, because we have an ice buildup problem in some of our downtown because of changes in slope. So that project will be starting with hopeful construction still this month and completion by August 1st before our DePauw students return. We've got an owner-occupied rehabilitation program going on in the second phase of our work with people who live in a designated area to get grant dollars up to $20,000 to $25,000 to do lead-based paint remediation as well as other improvements to their home. So we're working on that. We're also working on our parking alternatives. We started out with that structure. We went to a parking lot. We're negotiating on another piece of land for a parking lot. So we'll be going again. IHCDA is the funding source. We'll be moving through that process. And once we get the street section completed, we'll be doing the two parking lots still in 2014. The other piece that we're doing in 2014 is obviously the completion of our first round of facades, which we hope to have substantially completed by April the 30th, and moving into the second round of facade construction, which we'd also like to do in the 2014 calendar year.
When you say facade, is that the downtown area?
The downtown
area.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's mainly more a beautification.
Beautification and structure. Well. It's been a lot of structure in some of our initial projects. So we had, we'll end up doing probably 22 buildings before we're finished with both phases of that, which is quite a cosmetic uplift for buildings that are 150 years old. So it's exciting to watch them transform.
I also wanted to ask about, I'm just reading how Ivy Tech has been reorganizing throughout the state, and that's also happening here in Greencastle with the moving of being associated with Terre Haute now with Indianapolis?
Right. That's exactly what's happened. We've moved from the Wabash Valley chapter to the greater Indianapolis Ivy Tech system.
What's the reaction been, and is that a good fit?
I think it is a good fit. Mm-hmm. I think Ivy Tech, as everyone knows, has done a lot of consolidating in order to try and bring their costs in line. And last week, we had the privilege of having President Snyder with us and Dr. Kathy Lee, who's the chancellor for the greater Indianapolis region. And they met with our local economic development group at the annual meeting, the Greencastle-Putnam County Development Center. And they talked about the direction of Ivy Tech, and they talked about the real concentration for this campus to be one on going back to its 2009, when we opened this campus and where it had been previously, to a real workforce development site. And what I think we're going to see is really an emphasis from what they have told us and talked with us about advanced manufacturing and welding and back to an RN nursing program, doing things with logistics that we haven't been able to do. Some of those things had been handled in Ivy Tech in Terre Haute and so had been not considered for our area. I think people in Indianapolis know that the greater Indianapolis area is not just inside the 465 Beltway where the main campus is, but it's in the smaller strip mall presences that they have in Hendricks County and in the campus here in Greencastle that we bring a campus setting with what that means in terms of advisement, room for expansion. And I think they see us as being maybe a regional hub for the area between Indianapolis and the greater Putnam County area. So I think for us, it's a very exciting time. I think that going back to workforce development, which is not only one of Governor Pence's real issues as he looks to the future of what we need to do to be ready for business development, but most certainly our local business and industries talk often about what they need from a workforce, how ready is our workforce, how can we better train them so that when retirements come, we have people to move into those spots. And I think we're going to see a greater cooperation between our Area 30 Career Center, our high schools, Ivy Tech, dual credits, and again, by working together, maximize the resources we all have for that common goal, which is a ready and able workforce. It's a good thing. It's a good thing.
Good. And well, then that would be about 5 years then that Ivy Tech has been in Greencastle.
Even longer than that.
Has it? Okay.
But we were in outside sites. We were, you know, in where the Career Center was. And before that, Ivy Tech had a place in the downtown. And it was really concentrated in the health careers field, which we got away from a bit when the new campus was opened in 2009. Our understanding from President Snyder is that there's also conversations taking place in the State House about expansion and where those expansions for Ivy Tech would need to be. So they'll be talking about that in the next budget cycle. And I think from his what he shared last week with us, that the Greencastle site is in the top five of areas that they're going to be asking for resources for to do expansion. And you know, for us, again, I think that's a real positive sign that we're going to become more integral and more key in the Ivy Tech system as we move forward.
Is Ivy Tech, though, more than a place of workforce development and classes? Is it also a place for the community, too?
They have done a wonderful job in terms of bringing speakers in, inviting the community, having fundraising events for scholarship development for our local community. I think they're finding their place as a resource in working in cooperative efforts with the McDermott Entrepreneurship Center at DePauw University, finding ways that we can, again, give what we have to offer to a greater number of people and maximizing our resources. So they're developing into that for sure.
I wanted to get your reaction about the DePauw Tigers. They've just won their NCAC
yes, they
title.
Have. Yes, they
the
have.
The conference championship, which means that this is their 11th straight NCAA appearance. How about them Tigers, huh?
How about those Tigers? I had the privilege of watching them play in the finals last year and win the national championship. They're an exciting, dynamic group of young women. Chris Huffman, who has been their longtime coach and who has led them to such a wonderful, wonderful year this year and past years, is just an addition to our community who is such a special person and brings a joy for our whole community to get involved with, to watch her young women play, and the success they've had, I think we all feel. Our church does the concessions for the DePauw athletic events, and last week we had one of the biggest weeks we've ever had. We had a high school track meet, and we had the tournament going on, and it was wonderful. The men played on one night at the beginning of their tournament, and the women played from Tuesday, Friday, and Saturday, and the community was just out in force. The DePauw community, the local community, it's just a very exciting time, and they play again this weekend, and hopefully we'll see them continue on the road. I think they were ranked 4 at the end of last week. They had one 2-point loss in Ohio, and they went from number 1, where they had been all year, and they slipped down to number 4, which some of us are debating as to if that was a legitimate ranking. But it is what it is, and you know, they're the defending national champions, so they're the ones to beat, and we're really proud of them.